Penguin Random House Canada presents Life in Two Worlds, a coach's journey from the reservation to the NHL and back. Written by Ted Nolan with Meg Masters and read by James Malik. To Mom and Dad, the words I never had a chance to say. Thank you, and I love you. Your son, Teddy. Preface. I opened the door and felt a stab of anxiety. A delivery man was on the steps of my Garden River home, a clipboard in one hand and a box tucked under his arm. I knew what was in that box, but I'd pushed any thought of its arrival far from my mind. It was the Jack Adams Trophy. I'd won it about a year before at the NHL Annual Awards Ceremony. The Jack Adams, voted on by members of the National Hockey League Broadcasters Association, is awarded to the NHL Coach of the Year. I'd been given the honor after my second year coaching in the league. As the head coach of the Buffalo Sabres, I'd been in competition with the legendary Scotty Bowman, who had just led the Detroit Red Wings to the Stanley Cup. My win was, by all accounts, an incredible achievement for a coaching newcomer, an event I greeted with tears of pride. I signed the delivery form, thanked the driver, and took the box from him. Once I closed the door, I put it down on the entryway floor. Then I stood for a few seconds, staring at it, resting there between two sets of stairs, one leading up to my living room, one down to my basement. A rush of emotions came at me. Finally, they began to ebb, leaving just one, pure anger. I lifted my foot and with all the strength I had, kicked the box, sending it hurtling down the basement stairs. I heard it land with a loud metallic crash. Then I turned and went upstairs, determined to forget everything about it. Chapter 1. Garden River. Always be proud of who you are. It's been over 45 years since the last time I heard my father say those words, and yet I can hear his voice as clear as if he was standing by my side. No doubt I remember it so well because Stan Stewart Nolan said this hundreds of times. When I was very young, I didn't think much about why he said it. And it seemed an easy enough instruction. After all, I was part of a great family. Stan and Rose Nolan had 12 children, 5 daughters and 7 sons. I was the 3rd youngest. Despite our numbers, my parents managed to make us all feel loved, special, and appreciated. The youngest of us received plenty of kind attention from our older siblings as well. Our family was extremely close. We also lived in a great place. The Garden River First Nation Reserve is located in the middle of the 1850 Robinson-Huron Treaty area of the Anishinaabeg Nation, and is 52,000 acres of dense pine stretching along the St. Mary's River in beautiful northern Ontario. My mother's family had lived there for generations and had always been a big part of that community. My grandfather had been the chief, as had my mother's Uncle Jack. My father, too, was a leader in our community, the band manager and the welfare officer for a number of years, as well as the manager of a small lumber mill on the reserve. My mother was just as involved in the life of Garden River, devoting herself to all sorts of local cultural activities. There was so much to be proud of. I hardly needed reminding by Dad. Later, I would realize that how I looked at myself, my family and my community was a little different than how the rest of the world might regard us. I would come to understand that Stan Nolan's words always be proud of who you are, were probably repeated so often because he knew how difficult that could be made for us by outside forces. And I would come to appreciate that a robust sense of self-respect was the best protection any of us could have against what faced us in the future. But it would take some time for me to recognize my father's words as the gift they were. When I think of my father, that's what I remember best, his words and his voice. That voice wasn't loud or harsh, and yet there was a calm firmness that made you listen. And when you did, you heard not only about pride, but also about hard work. My dad was a relative newcomer to Garden River. I believe he grew up somewhere near Wawa, but I'm not entirely certain. When he met and married my mom, he moved to her reserve, where my mother's dad, the chief at the time, made him a member. In return, Dad devoted himself to the community. It was in the role of welfare officer that my dad made loud and clear to many in Garden River his intense belief in the value of hard work. At home, we learned this early. He had us chopping wood, stoking the fire, emptying the slop pail, and doing other tasks around the house as soon as we were able. If he didn't think we were working hard enough, he'd give us an earful. At the welfare office, he often told those looking for aid that he expected them to do some community work in return, whether it was chopping wood or shoveling snow. "Don't you ever rely on this government, Ted," he used to tell me. That you had to earn your way in the world was central to my dad's way of thinking, and when you couldn't earn what you needed, you had to learn to do the best you could with what you did have. Self-reliance and perseverance, those were Stan Nolan's golden rules. An imposing man, 6 feet tall and broad-framed, Dad was a strict disciplinarian who didn't tolerate nonsense. We'd get a smack if we acted up in front of him, and if he heard we'd made trouble at school or elsewhere, we'd get the same. But we always knew that Dad's punishments were not about showing his authority or being in control. Instead, he made it clear to us that being disciplined like this was a way to remind us that we needed to have respect for others, and, just as importantly, we needed to have respect for ourselves. Bad behavior dishonored those who exhibited it. Whenever he sent us off to wash our faces or tuck in our shirts, he'd remind us, "We may be poor, but we don't have to look like it." One of Dad's other passionate beliefs was the importance of telling the truth. Honesty is one of the 7 grandfather teachings of the Ojibwe culture, Debwewin. And in many ways it was linked to my father's attitude about self-respect. To truly act with self-respect, it was essential that you speak your truth. Telling people what they wanted to hear, pretending you thought or felt differently than you did, was no way to live, according to my father. Not until years later did I realize how deeply and thoroughly I had embraced these 2 ideas, respect and truthfulness, how they strengthened me, even as they made some of my interactions with others challenging. While it's my father's voice I think of when I remember him, the first thing that comes to mind about my mother is her eyes. My mother, Rose, was more gentle, but no less firm in sharing her beliefs and opinions with us. Never once in my life did I hear her raise her voice or lash out in any way. Calm and steady, she layered her love with reassuring advice. "Just do your best." And if we misbehaved, we read her thoughts in those expressive eyes of hers. "I'm disappointed." She was affectionate and nurturing, with a magnetism that drew our family together. And despite the fact that there were 14 of us, not including the grandchildren that were around even when I was young, she was full of energy. Her primary focus was always her family, but her passion extended to her larger community.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?